Welcome into this Locked On Bears, Locked On Vikings crossover podcast, brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, when you sign up, and MyBookie will match your first deposit with up to a 50% bonus. I'm Lauren Cox, the host of Locked On Bears, and I am joined by Sam Ekstrom, the host of Locked On Vikings. For your listeners, Sam, you can find me on Twitter at CoxSports1. You can find my work at Pro Football Focus, and I also write for USA Today's BearsWire.com. Sam, let my listeners know what it is you do on Vikings with the Vikings and what they can and where they can find you on Twitter.
Absolutely. At Sam Ekstrom on Twitter. Pretty simple. E-K-S-T-R-O-M, the last name. And my Vikings work going up at ZoneCoverage.com. I'm at the team facility right now, sitting in my car, which is probably a little better heated than it is outside the car, which is about 5 degrees and snow and wind chill and terrible. So that's the status of things here.
Well, thank God the Vikings play indoors at that nice US Bank Stadium.
Right.
That makes things a lot easier. I know like the Bears are practicing indoors this week because they have no reason to try and practice outside in this weather. So it's I think the players appreciate that too and not having to try and dredge through the frozen ground in a frozen football.
I think if we were still playing at TCF Bank Stadium, if it was still 2 years ago and they were on the U of M campus, the forecast for Sunday afternoon would be in the negatives, and I think the low that day is about negative 14, so that would be an all-timer. Might have been even worse than the playoff game against Seattle a couple of years ago, which was about negative 6. We're in really a frozen tundra kind of feel. It's probably not going to turn for another 10 days or so. So we're hunkering down here, Lauren.
Well, I will enjoy the warmth of my couch and television and enjoy the game the way maybe it's best to watch football this time of year. But let's get into this matchup between two teams. I mean, we talked previously in week 5. There was a lot to go through with the big debut of Mitchell Trubisky, and the Vikings ended up having their own quarterback change in that game. But fast forwarding to right now, the Vikings, they're kind of playing for a first round bye, but it also kind of feels like it would take a pretty difficult situation for them to lose it. So are we still expecting a full-fledged Vikings effort to play hard for 4 quarters to win this game, or do they kind of know that the result might not matter?
Well, in their minds, do they know that? Yes, and I'm sure it makes them optimistic, but if you believe everything you hear out of the facility, they're treating this like a playoff game. Mike Zimmer considered it a playoff game. Stephon Diggs, Kyle Rudolph, Adam Thielen yesterday, they were all saying the same thing. Like, this is a playoff-type atmosphere, playoff-type game for us because it counts for two. If we win this game, not only do we get a win in the regular season, but we get basically a free pass in the playoffs to the divisional round. No team has made the Super Bowl since 2012 without the bye. The Vikings desperately want the bye. And it's not like they can sit back and check the scores at halftime and say, oh, okay, the Saints are handling the Bucks, we're going to be fine, because those are later games. This is a noon game on Sunday, and all the other games of consequence are 3:25 starts. So the Vikings want to take care of business so they don't have to sit in the locker room and sweat this thing out and pray that a miraculous scenario doesn't occur against them. It would take a couple upsets, Lauren, but crazier things have happened. So the Vikings definitely want to handle business. I'm not sure the Bears are going to get anything less than Minnesota's finest effort. So in case they were hoping to steal a win here late in the season, the Vikings aren't going to make it easy.
Yeah, the Vikings haven't made it easy on anyone this year. And I do want to get into later on one of the losses that they had this year more recently to the Panthers. But I want to take a big picture look here, because obviously week 5 was a long time ago, and the Vikings quarterback situation, like, week 5 was kind of the beginning of the Case Keenum era, or at least like the solidification of the start of the Case Keenum era, and he's taken and run with the quarterback job. But what else has changed about the Vikings since week 5?
It's a great question. So week 5 was a huge turning point, actually, for this team, Lauren. They were 2-2. Packers were 4-1 at the time. So Vikings loss against Chicago, which I think was a very real possibility going in. I think we talked on the show about that week. about how the Vikings just had this wacky mojo at Soldier Field, how they could easily go in and lose that game, and they almost did. It was 17-17 late. Harrison Smith makes the late interception. They win the game on a Kai Forbath field goal. So instead of falling two games back of Green Bay, and they were playing Green Bay next week, so that could have been the hammer down. Like, that could have been three games back of Green Bay. As it was, they beat Chicago. They went in, they injured Aaron Rodgers, they beat Green Bay, took the division lead, and that propelled them forward. Now, at that time in the season, they were kind of winning ugly. Like, the Green Bay win, the Chicago win, the Baltimore win, the Cleveland win to some extent, those were kind of ugly wins. And people were saying, well, is that going to work against teams like Atlanta, Carolina, Los Angeles in the second half of the season? Everybody was afraid of the schedule. Well, then they come out of the bye, and they clearly made some important adjustments, particularly with the running game, with red zone offense. Case Keenum started playing his best football after the bye, and they rattle off 4 out of 5 against Washington, L.A., Detroit on the road, Atlanta on the road, excuse me, and then, of course, they lose to Carolina. But Keenum started playing his best football. Mike Zimmer put his faith in Keenum, and he said yesterday that he kind of really bought into Keenum as their quarterback about 4 or 5 weeks ago when he was playing so well amidst that 8-game winning streak. So I would say the Vikings are winning prettier now than they did back then, and as you saw, they took care of business against Cincinnati. They took care of business against Green Bay, didn't mess around, and they've got some great wins against some great teams mixed in there as well. And they've really taken on almost all of the NFC playoff picture, and they performed pretty well against most of those teams. So Minnesota, I think, has changed a lot since Week 5. Why don't you take us through what Chicago has done since that point? Because in that game, I think Trubisky showed a lot of positive signs, particularly in the first quarter with the scripted plays they had, and then maybe tailed off as the game went on. How would you say he's progressed in the last couple months?
Yeah, the Bears, since that Vikings game, went through a little bit of the roller coaster type season. You know, after that Vikings game, there was sort of a new level of hope still, even after the loss, that, hey, there's a rookie quarterback in here that can make some pretty impressive plays, even if he's still a little rough around the edges. They follow that up with the overtime win over the Ravens, and then they pretty well handled the Carolina Panthers after that. And you started to wonder if maybe the Bears were reaching some kind of turning point. They'd gotten up to 3-4, that maybe this wasn't going to be as terrible of a season, because the first stretch of games was against a lot of playoff caliber opponents, and obviously Mike Glennon wasn't getting the job done there. So they thought maybe that, you know, they string together a couple wins before the bye week, and then the schedule lightens up in the second half of the season with an injured Green Bay and San Francisco and Cincinnati and Cleveland, and maybe, just maybe, this team could at least push to get closer to 500 than they have been in years past. But they lose to the Saints right before the bye. They go into bye and come out against Green Bay and completely look flat. Nothing seemed to have changed. They didn't make any real strong adjustments, and you saw a team continue to lack direction and consistency, and they ended up losing 5 games in a row before they played the Bengals, which was sort of the temporary cure-all before the Lions kind of brought them back down where they needed to be. And you're left with a Bears team facing a looming head coaching change this offseason. You've got Mitchell Trubisky playing well, and there's been some give and take there. They still haven't fully taken the gloves off and let him run a full-on offense. They kind of mix in parts here and there, but they still like to simplify things here and there and take some questionable decisions at some critical moments as far as third downs and not getting guys open past the first down marker. And, you know, the offensive line hasn't helped a ton in that sense, and now they're more banged up than they were in Week 5, and they're just not consistently playing up to the potential of their young talent right now. And I don't think you're going to see a lot of Bears fans super optimistic for a close game against the Minnesota Vikings. But at the same time, we think Trubisky has shown enough to say that it's not going to be a blowout either. I think that's what makes this one a fun one in the world of sports betting. You know, right now on mybookie.ag, the Minnesota Vikings are 11.5-point favorites over the Chicago Bears, and I think a lot of Bears fans feel like they can at least cover that spread. If you want to get in on the action for this game or any NFL game this week or bowl games even, mybookie.ag is the place to do it. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on, and MyBookie.ag is the place to do it. When you start winning with MyBookie, they get your cash turned around back to you and paid out quickly. Join now, and MyBookie will match your first deposit with up to a 50% bonus if you use the promo code LOCKEDON when you sign up. That's LOCKEDON, no spaces. Believe it or not, you can even deposit using Bitcoin. So whatever your betting needs are, MyBookie.ag is your hookup. Because at MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid.
Well, let me just spiderweb off of that coaching change you alluded to, because I see it too. The writing's on the wall. I'm not sure that Fox could do much, even in this game, if they were to come out with an upset win. I think his fate might already be written. How do you feel about the guys below him, though, the coordinator, quarterbacks coach, offensive coaches? Do you feel like it's going to be a house cleaning, or are there some pieces there that would help Trubisky develop in the future, or do you think it's going to be a clean slate with a new coaching staff next year?
I think it's going to be a clean slate, but I also think it's hard sometimes with this team to fully evaluate some of the guys, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, because there's a certain unknown level of influence that John Fox has on this offense. And the Bears have kind of hinted at it subtly behind the scenes. Like Mitchell Trubisky at one point a few weeks ago had some quote about, you know, he was asked if he feels like the coaches have faith in him and how he likes the offense. And he said something about executing what John Fox allows us to do on offense, or what Coach Fox allows us to do on offense, which is concerning because Fox has never been an offensive guy, and you kind of would hope he lets the offensive coordinator kind of run things. So there's some unknown level of, you know, obviously John Fox isn't calling the plays, but he's clearly influencing some decisions on that end. And there's been plenty of reason to complain about offensive personnel usage from the offensive coordinator, play calling in certain situations, not getting certain players on the field, you know, not getting young players on the field that can make impact plays, and not scheming to get the ball their way or use like a Tariq Cohen as a decoy. There have been a lot of issues that you seem to be able to point to the offensive coordinator, you know, regardless of John Fox's influence. But at the same time, you wonder just how much John Fox has been able to influence there. And then defensively, the defensive coordinator Vic Fangio has done a pretty solid job considering the injuries and the lack of talent right now at some positions on the defense. But the worst kept secret in Chicago is that he wanted out after last year and had another year left in his contract. Even if John Fox were to come back next year, which seems entirely unlikely, Vic Fangio is gone pretty much one way or another, unless they were to hire some head coach that would want to keep Vic. It still seems unlikely, and we're looking at pretty much a full house cleaning in Chicago.
Well, the Vikings have a lot of coordinators that are going to have some pretty high stocks, and I think they're all interested in moving up the ranks. So will you care for a Pat Shurmur, a George Edwards, or a Mike Prefer, the Vikings' three coordinators? Any of them? Take your pick.
Yeah, I'll pass on Mike Prefer based on some of the stuff that came out about him a couple years ago. But, yeah, you know, I had Arif Hassan from Zone Coverage along with you on the show a couple weeks ago to talk about Pat Shurmur as a head coach candidate. I'm definitely eyeing him as at least someone near the top of the list. It's just not a great crop of head coaching candidates. There's no Kyle Shanahan out there right now. I mean, I think, you know, you see like the John DeFilippo and the Matt LaFleur from Los Angeles. There's a lot of reason to be excited there, but there's some real risk that goes into that. And I think Shurmur has that baseline level of, you know, some of what you're getting with him, and maybe he hasn't had the perfect track record, and Cleveland was a difficult situation on its own, but he's done some pretty phenomenal things with Case Keenum and Sam Bradford in Minnesota, and getting those weapons in a pretty nice position to be successful. And I want to turn it back there, because, you know, I look at this Vikings running game, and you talk about the change at the bye week, and maybe they've been more successful lately, but it seems like they also, you know, like McKinnon and Latavius Murray, you're not getting 100 yards in any game from them individually, but they kind of combine with maybe a few Keenum scrambles to get the team a decent ground game. How would you describe, I guess, the effectiveness of the Vikings running game?
Yeah, it's interesting because they lose Dalvin Cook, and everyone thinks the world's ending. They're 2-2 at that point. And Cook, everyone assumed, had been the reason behind the resurrected rushing game. They thought that, well, this rushing game was terrible last year. The injured Adrian Peterson, Matt Asiata was getting too many carries. But now Dalvin Cook, he's changed things. He goes out. People assume that it's over for the running game. Well, it hasn't been. The offensive line has been so much better this year. It's unbelievable. They had some more mobile interior linemen. Pat Elflein has been a monster at getting to the second level. Nick Easton, their left guard, who might be the weak link on that line, and he's out now with a fractured ankle. He's done for the year, but he was great at getting to the outside. He was really tough. Joe Berger is a stalwart veteran at right guard. So their guard play has been so much better, helping run between the tackles. McKinnon is naturally gifted at getting to the outside, and he's also great in the passing game, which is another story. But Murray seems to be far more effective in short yardage than they had last year. And McKinnon has been incredibly efficient. Like last week against the Packers, only 7 carries, but he went for 42 yards. And it's not like one of those runs was 35 yards. He was rattling off 7, 8, 6 yards a run and racking up a nice total. So they sprinkle in McKinnon, a heavy dose of Murray, who I think frustrates a lot of fans because he really can't run laterally. He's still only good for about 3.5 to 4 yards a carry. And I don't think he's really a long-term answer. And obviously, Dalvin Cook will take his place again next year. But I think it's a combo of good play calling. I think Pat Shurmur's been really adaptable. He knows when to call the run plays. He calls them against good defensive personnel sets that are favorable to the Vikings' blocking schemes. He seems to succeed when he runs the hurry-up in the run game, which he will do a lot. He likes to kind of keep his hand on the throttle, change the pace of the offense, and they'll hurry up to the line after a long pass play, hit a team with a run, maybe when they're a little bit gassed, and they'll get 7 yards, and they get second and short, and that sets up the rest of his play calling. So it's a good rhythm that Shurmur has. The offensive line is a lot faster than it was last year, and I think it helps for Murray and McKinnon to know that they're the guys. Cook's gone. They're not, you know, McKinnon's not looking over his shoulder like he did last year with Adrian Peterson's impending return. That's kind of been the theme of the running game. You know, no one is outstanding at anything. No one, but you've got a lot of masters of none out there, guys who just do their job and they kind of get through it in gritty fashion.
Part of that too is I was looking at the Pro Football Focus numbers, and Case Keenum runs the most play action of any quarterback in the NFL this season, and that's going to be one of the key matchups I'm looking for in this game, because seems like lately, and perhaps uncharacteristically, even Danny Trevathan, the Bears' veteran linebacker, he's been really slow to read and react to play action and get back and get to, you know, to cover a receiver behind him. And so, you know, I could see that being an easy advantage for the Vikings if Kyle Rudolph's able to go out there. I know he was limited at practice earlier this week. Do you know what his status is? And on the topic of injuries, the center, Pat Elflein, you mentioned him too. He wasn't practicing with the shoulder. Do you know what the status is of those two guys and what the potential replacement plans would be?
Sure. Well, in Rudolph's case, he's been battling an ankle injury since the Panthers game. But he played the next week against Cincinnati. He played against Green Bay. So he hasn't really missed any time. I think they're just taking it easy on him during the week. He'll probably play. Pat Elflein, I just got out of practice about 30 minutes ago. Elflein did not have a helmet on, so that's 2 days now of inactive Elflein. So then the succession plan with, again, no more Nick Easton. He was the backup center. That means Joe Berger will take his old spot at center, moving from right guard to center. You're going to have Jeremiah Searles filling in at left guard for Easton. And then right guard probably becomes Danny Isadora, the fifth-round rookie out of Miami. He's gotten a little bit of time this year. But you're going to have possibly an entirely new interior line look. And that's a concern, honestly, for the Vikings going forward, because so much of the offensive line is built around chemistry. The interior line has been so strong this year that you hate to mess it up. But you obviously want to keep Elflein healthy for the playoffs. So maybe if he doesn't play, it might be the type of injury where he could have played if it was a playoff game, but I would expect he's back for the playoffs, if not on Sunday. So, yeah, I think those were the only two you asked about. Elflein would be replaced by Berger. I think Rudolph plays, so no worries about that. No worries about him.
Well, I wanted to ask you, too, about that Carolina Panthers loss from a couple weeks ago, because it seemed relatively uncharacteristic for the Vikings. And I mean, in the world of NFL parity, the Bears beat the Panthers, and the Panthers beat the Vikings. So in theory, the Bears should win in Week 17. But in reality, you know, like that was a game where Case Keenum had some turnovers, and surprisingly, the Vikings defense got gashed in the running game. It seemed like, you know, Cam Newton was able to scramble for quite a bit, and I think Jonathan Stewart was running the ground game well. Obviously, the Bears are going to try and get their ground game going to take pressure off of Mitchell Trubisky. That's always been the strategy every week. What were the Panthers able to do in the ground game against a very good Minnesota Vikings defense that other teams haven't been as successful doing?
Yeah, that was a wacky game, and maybe this comes off as a biased take, but I think it's actually fairly objective. I think the Vikings didn't do nearly as much wrong in that game as people want to assume by the box score. Panthers had 216 yards, I think, in that game on the ground. That was two plays. They had two plays that went for, I think, 60 and 70 yards, respectively. The Vikings held them to 2.8 yards per carry on every other carry in that game. It was two plays. So the first one was like a third and inches. Panthers went with an eight-man line. They had three guys off right tackle. I think it was unbalanced, actually. They just loaded up the right side. Vikings had a terrible run fit, and Jonathan Stewart broke through the line. There was nobody back because the Vikings had everybody in the box, and he went for a touchdown. Second one was a bad play on a read option by Everson Griffin. It was a Cam Newton read option in the fourth quarter of that game when it was tied at 24. Griffin bit on the fake handoff. He committed to the running back, and then Newton broke off left tackle, just juked our safety Andrew Sandejo out of his jock, and then scampered for 70 yards. It was two bad plays. I don't think it was a consistent problem, and I think the Vikings have backed it up now with two straight wins after that, demonstrating that, yeah, they know how to defend the run. They're second best in the league in that category. And then there were just a bunch of things that went wrong in that game, too. You know, they miss a field goal. They had an interception that hit Stephon Diggs in the hands. They had a fumble that was, like, sitting on Case Keenum's palm that he threw, and it looked like an incomplete pass. Nobody knew what to do, and then Carolina picked it up. So there was just some crazy things happening. I think if they played Carolina again, especially at home, I think they would win. And they still almost won that game, too, despite everything that went amiss. They still almost won that game in the fourth quarter. So, honestly, a lot of Vikings fans went away from that game, Lauren, somewhat encouraged, like, wow, everything went wrong, and we still were in it late in the fourth quarter. And I think the Vikings have responded really well to it. Might have been a little wake-up call, and it might have given them some urgency here going into Week 17. Let me turn the tide over to the Bears, talk a little bit about Chicago here. And I've asked this to the last two opposing hosts that I've had on the show, and it was the Cincinnati host, the Green Bay host, and their seasons haven't gone great. Same can be said for your team. But what do you think is the glimmer of hope? What do you think Bears fans are clinging to going forward? Obviously, Trubisky's an obvious answer. What else can you add to that?
Yeah, it's honestly Trubisky. Like, it's Trubisky and a new head coach. There's not a lot of you know, excitement on the rest of the team. You know, Tariq Cohen is fun to watch when he's got the ball in his hands, but they've had some trouble getting the ball in his hands. And you know, Jordan Howard can get his, you know, 3-4 yards per carry for the most part, and even when the offensive line isn't that great. But like, their second round pick, Adam Shaheen, the tight end, he's been dealing with, I think, a chest injury and has not played in the last few weeks. And I think he was still limited coming into this week at practice. And so it remains to be seen even if he's going to play. So there's not a lot of shine on the offense. And then on the other side of the ball, it's fun to get excited about Kyle Fuller and Prince Amukamara at cornerback, but both of those guys are going to be free agents this offseason, and it remains to be seen if the Bears are going to want to pay up, because the price for free agent cornerbacks is not cheap. And you know, as much as they might want to re-sign their own, Fuller wasn't drafted by this general manager. There was some tension between he and the defensive coordinator last year, so he might be on the way out. I mean, it's kind of Mitch Trubisky on offense, Akeem Hicks on defense. They're here for a while. They're locked in. They're young, and they're playing at a very high level. And everything else is kind of just biding your time until John Fox get fired. And you know, that we're less than a week away from that. So I think Bears fans are getting a little bit antsy. They're looking forward to a very exciting Black Monday.
Well, from afar, it feels like Chicago has a nice defensive foundation. Your top 8, top 10, top 12, and a lot of defensive categories. And as Vikings fans know, a defensive turnaround can happen pretty quickly. From 2013 to 2014, when they brought Zimmer in, they leapt up 15, 20 spots in defense just with a new head coach and a couple acquisitions in the offseason. And then the next year, they took another big step, and suddenly they were a top 5 defense, and they've pretty well stayed that way for the next 3 years. Even with all the quarterback uncertainty, they've gone from Castle to Bridgewater, then to Bradford, then to Keenum. They haven't had a consistent quarterback for any of Zimmer's 4 years, and yet they've still been a very competitive team. And if not for a bunch of injuries last year, we'd probably be talking about a 3-time division champion. I think you got to invest in that defense. Bring in a defensive-minded coach and build a strong defense around Trubisky. I feel like that's got to be the objective, right, to try to give him some support on the defensive side.
I think everyone in Chicago wants the next Doug Peterson, the next Sean McVay. They want that young, hotshot offensive coordinator to come in, build a real offense around the rookie quarterback. And I do think quite a few people are kind of taking the Bears defense for granted. I mean, they are currently top 10 in both passing and rushing yards allowed, and right around the similar area in terms of like per carry and per attempt type averages, and you know, top 10 in points allowed and yards allowed. So they're subtly not a bad defense at all. And I think people are too quick to kind of assume that they can just plug in and get an equally good defensive coordinator, that a new head coach will just be able to find one. But Vic Fangio has quietly done a pretty solid job despite, you know, losing his top pass rushers, losing some depth on the defensive line. And, you know, his is a scheme that needs good outside linebackers. And right now it's Sam Acho and Lamar Houston not even necessarily doing a great job. And the Bears pass rush has been probably the biggest issue on their defense. And yet they're still able to stay in pretty much every game they've gone up. They haven't really been truly blown out since the Philadelphia Eagles game, and that was obviously against a top-notch opponent. But they've played the Lions tough. They played the Packers tough. They played the New Orleans Saints tough earlier in the season, and that is definitely something that I think gets overlooked. But all signs are pointing to the young, offensive-minded head coach, and maybe they can keep Vic Fangio, but more likely than not, there's going to be some change in the coaching on the defense, and I think that's a real concern moving forward, and something that, you know, Minnesota Vikings have been able to linger through here. You know, they lucked out to find a Pat Shurmur to sort of from tight ends coach, the offensive coordinator, to run a pretty successful offense underneath the defensive minded head coach. So it's there's no easy way to do it. And I think we'll see them shoot for offense, but, and I don't know, it wouldn't surprise me if they surprised other people and went for a defensive-minded guy, because I think everyone is pushing for offensive guy. So, you know, I think they're going to do their due diligence, but more likely than not, they're finding the best coach for Mitchell Trubisky, and I think they might see that as an offensive guy.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, Lauren. Off topic, is Zach Miller going to play again? What are the reports on Miller?
I would be surprised. I mean, it's very unknown right now. He almost lost his leg after that injury in the Saints game, and he's walking around with a big old brace on there. I have a feeling it's going to be the type of thing where he would miss all of 2018 anyway, and then he is well on the wrong side of 30. I want to say he's 32 already. He might be turning 33. But so he is 33 already. He would turn 34 during the season next year. So could he play again in 2019? Maybe. Will he want to? That remains. You know, he hasn't announced his retirement or anything. He hasn't really been. I mean, I think he was asked about it, and he kind of said, "Well, I'm just focusing on being able to walk normally, and then I'll make a decision about football." But I would be pretty surprised if Zach Miller plays football again. And the Bears have missed having him on offense. He was kind of their most consistent passing threat early in the season. You know, the rookie Adam Shaheen has flashed a few times since, but he's still hurt, like I mentioned earlier, and they've kind of just been left with Kendall Wright out of the slot, as their primary receiving option. And he's been doing a pretty consistent job there, but he's surrounded by like a Josh Bellamy at wide receiver who's more of a special teams player. And they traded for Dontrell Inman from the Chargers, who initially played pretty well but has been non-existent in the last few weeks. And there's also Marcus Wheaton that they signed this offseason, but he has just been a complete and total waste of space and money. So still not getting consistent weapons without Zach Miller. And it's been, you know, it's limited their offense in some sense. I mean, in other sense, you know, they haven't been passing it as effectively as they could. There have been a few times when Mitchell Trubisky just isn't hitting a few throws when he needs to, and a couple turnovers in the Lions game certainly didn't help. But, you know, they've faced some pretty quality defenses, and they're going to be getting another one of those this week. And I've got my eye on Harrison Smith making some more plays this week. And I was going to ask you about how he's utilized. For my listeners that don't watch a lot of Minnesota Vikings, you know, he's obviously a Pro Bowl snub, I think, across the board for a safety there. But
yeah,
where's his playing time split in terms of being in the box versus covering in a slot and then also taking a deep end on the field?
He's definitely in the box most of the time. They reserve a lot of the playing back, kind of the last line of defense, this high safety for Andrew Sendejo, because they like Sendejo in pass coverage, but in run coverage too, Sendejo is kind of the bowling ball that comes in and crashes and sometimes recklessly just hits people, but he finishes off a lot of tackles. Smith is a little bit savvier. Yeah, he can cover a guy in the slot, but more often than that, he's going to at least bluff a blitz. He'll bluff a safety blitz. Sometimes he'll come. The Vikings, all their blitz packages are predicated on diversion and sleight of hand, and so often they're showing blitz and not bringing it, but it creates scrambles at the line of scrimmage, especially for inexperienced lines. They don't know how to handle it, and Smith provides such a realistic threat that you have to account for him. So when he's playing up at the line, yeah, you got to figure out who's taking Harrison Smith, whether or not he's going to come. Harrison Smith is putting together a remarkable season, and it's a shame he wasn't initially in the Pro Bowl. Now, I assume with Landon Collins going down, he might be next in line. He was just the NFC Defensive Player of the Week. He had two interceptions against Green Bay. But, yeah, he's going to muck it up in there with the line. He's not going to, like, freelance deep downfield and just intercept deep passes. You know, most of his interceptions come on those underneath routes where he sort of tricks the wide receiver, and then he cuts under like he did against Trubisky in Week 5. He did it twice against Hundley on Saturday. Smith is a lot of fun to watch. He's maybe not as sexy as a guy like Troy Polamalu, but he does everything well. He's incredible at tackling. He reads passing plays like no other safety I've ever seen. Rarely makes a mistake. So Harrison Smith is so underrated, I think, in this league. Two-time Pro Bowler, probably should be a three- or four-time Pro Bowler. And, I mean, he's got us. If he were to get hurt on this defense, it might be one of the most devastating injuries to this unit. That's how important he is.
Wow. Well, let's get into some game predictions here. You know, obviously the discrepancy between these two teams seems to be large. What are you feeling for a score prediction here? I'm feeling we're both taking the Vikings, but what kind of margin are you looking at?
Yeah, I said 28-10 yesterday, and I'm thinking I'm going to stick with that. I'm just looking back at the Vikings' home games this year. Aside from their anomaly loss against Detroit where they lost Dalvin Cook and they fumbled three times, they beat the Bucs by 17. They beat the Packers by 13. They beat the Rams by 17, Bengals by 27. Ravens game was 15 until they had a garbage time touchdown. You know, no team has come in and really competed at home except for Detroit. And the way the Vikings have come out of the gate recently, it feels like they'll get up early in this game. And I don't see Chicago scoring more than twice offensively, barring a Vikings giveaway on offense. Chicago would have to make some incredible defensive plays if they were going to get in this game early. It would have to be sort of like when the Vikings played the Browns. The Browns intercepted Keenum right out of the gate, and they scored an early touchdown. And they made that interesting into the fourth quarter. Chicago would have to do something similar, but again, Trubisky's probably going to be in his most hostile atmosphere at US Bank Stadium. This crowd is totally bought into the team and the defense, and they're going to really create a home field advantage. So I have a hard time seeing Chicago scoring more than 10, maybe 13 or 14 max. I'm going to go with Minnesota by 18. They're the best team against the spread in the NFL this year, Lauren. I think they cover.
Well, the Bears have not won this season. They're in under John Fox. They have not won a game until last week that they were favored in the point spread. So they've not done well in the world of betting. But yeah, I'm going to go a similar idea, but I'm going to go 21-13. I think maybe the Bears, you know, maybe it's 6-21 for a long time. And then in the fourth quarter, the Bears finally get a touchdown or something like that to make the final score a little bit closer than the game felt for four quarters. But one way or another, maybe they just barely squeak in and cover it. I feel like maybe you get a Vikings missed field goal in there as well. And, you know, by the fourth quarter, you're feeling pretty comfortable in Minnesota, and the Vikings are well on their way to a first round bye. It's certainly two very different feeling seasons, but Sam, I appreciate you doing this crossover podcast here to break down this game. It's the last one of the regular season, and I wish you luck in your playoff podcast. I'm not going to know what that's like.
Well, thank you for your contributions, Lauren. I'm sure my listeners appreciate your insight. You're one of the sharpest guys we have on the show, so I'd certainly appreciate it. And I said this to another Chicago show I went on, that it's hard to talk about a team when they're losing. Vikings went through the doldrums last year, and it's a grind. So it's noble work that you do. I'm sure your listeners appreciate it. Keep on trucking, and I'm sure things will turn around for you.